Hey, everyone. Welcome. It's Naomi Wolf of Daily Clout, and I'm so honored and excited to be interviewing Marjorie Cohn, one of my personal heroes and one of the very few people I think is left in America who can really shine light for everyone on all the things we need to know about liberty and civil rights. Marjorie, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Naomi. It's quite an honor.
It's my great pleasure. The honor is mine. And a tiny bit of bio, you know, one of the most accomplished people I know, Marjorie Cohn is Professor Emerita from the Thomas Jefferson School of Law. She was formerly president of the National Lawyers Guild, and it was in that capacity that I initially met her. She's a member of the Board of Advisors of the Veterans for Peace and many, many other contributions to the world around her. So having said that, I'm just gonna jump right in. Marjorie very kindly lets us reprint from Truth Out, Jurist, and other publications her incredibly insightful columns, usually about civil rights and civil liberties. I first got to know Marjorie when I was writing Give Me Liberty, and I realized that no one or very few people, Marjorie and the National Lawyers Guild were some of the few of them, explain to Americans what their rights are. And I actually needed her help and her organization's help when I personally was arrested for telling people at an Occupy protest what their First Amendment rights are. So I owe her a lot, including my personal liberty. And I'm just going to jump right in with a really crucially important article that she wrote about Trump's militarization of the response to protesters. So Marjorie, is it okay if I jump right in and ask you questions about that?
Absolutely.
Before I do, what would you say the headline of that article was? What motivated you to write it?
Well, here's Trump bringing the U.S. military onto U.S. soil to deal with protesters and, you know, fully armed to the teeth with military weapons and threatening to do some real harm to people. And that caught my attention. And I thought that is not good. It's illegal, it's immoral, and it has to be exposed.
Absolutely. And some of the things you called attention to are things that people are pretty confused about. For instance, and I tried to tease this out in The End of America, but there's a difference, right, between the National Guard and other threats that Trump was making. Do you want to spell out like what he was doing that's illegal? Why isn't calling out the National Guard part of what the federal government can do? Why is the way he was using the military threatening protesters against our law, in your view, and against our Constitution?
Well, there is what is called the Posse Comitatus Act, and that makes it illegal for the president to use military, the U.S. military troops, to enforce the domestic law. But there are exceptions to the Posse Comitatus Act, specifically in the Insurrection Act. And there are four ways that the Insurrection Act can be used. The most common way is if the governor of a state asks the president to bring troops in, such as to enforce the civil rights laws, which is mainly how it's been used. And there are two other ways, but the one I think that is the most controversial and may have the most, the largest implication for what we're talking about here is a section that says when the president considers that unlawful obstruction combinations or assemblages or rebellion against the authority of the United States make it impracticable, that means impractical, to enforce the laws of the United States in any state by the ordinary course of judicial proceedings. So what that does is to give Trump the power to use the military if he subjectively believes that protesters are interfering with the enforcement of the law and the judicial proceedings. Now, there is no evidence that the protests, the Black Lives Matter protests, are inhibiting the courts or the criminal justice system from functioning. So that section does not really apply. That threshold has not been met. So although the courts would be unlikely to overrule Trump's subjective determination, service members may decide not to follow those orders. And there is, and this is very interesting, there is a Uniform Code of Military Justice requires that service members obey lawful orders. And those are orders that comply with the Constitution and other laws, other statutes. But the Army Field Manual and the Nuremberg Principles create the legal duty to disobey unlawful orders. And there are retired generals who say this would be unlawful. Veterans for Peace put out a call to National Guard troops not to follow orders. And a number of service members have already gone AWOL, have contacted.
Wow.
Yes, the GI Rights Hotline, the National Lawyers Guild Military Law Task Force for legal advice about what their rights are. So, and the thing is that when Trump ordered these protests into Washington, I think that there were about 1,600 troops that he brought into Washington from Fort Bragg and Fort Drum. He reportedly wanted 10,000 troops, but his chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and Defense Secretary supposedly talked him out of that. And the military is not trained in peacekeeping or de-escalation. They're trained to use lethal force in other countries against other people, which I have written about is illegal in many ways that the U.S. uses them as well. Also, on June the 1st, two Army National Guard helicopters were used as a show of force, usually reserved for combat zones. Two helicopters flew low over protests, sending protesters running for cover, tearing posters from the sides of buildings in a persistent presence, and pilots were given no guidance, were forced to so-called wing it. Wind speeds created by low hovering helicopters can lift objects and cause even injury or death, according to Human Rights Watch. Well, there was such a backlash against Trump's bringing these troops into Washington from military leaders, defense officials. 89 former defense officials signed a very scathing letter, Congress members. So he withdrew the troops about 6 days later. And he said now that everything's under perfect control, but they can return quickly if needed, which means that he is holding this in reserve as a cudgel. And who knows, Naomi, what could happen as the protests continue, as the protests escalate, as the election nears, right. And it looks like he's not doing well in the polls. Of course, that doesn't take into account the cheating and voter suppression that's going on. But let's say that he loses the election. Is he going to call out the troops, declare martial law? That would be illegal. Is he going to cancel the election? That would also be illegal under the 22nd Amendment. But it's very, very frightening.
So you've actually anticipated all of the questions that I have written down to ask you. So let me, it's a powerful, powerful summary, quite terrifying, I will be frank. Let me go back and ask, like, you know, Liberty 101 questions about this fundamental initial threat and then his action. Trump warned that he would send in, first he said the National Guard, and then he said, quote, heavily armed soldiers. As you pointed out, governors rejected federal troops. Some of them said, we don't want them, we don't need them. And even Mayor Muriel Bowser demanded the withdrawal of troops, you wrote in your powerful column, from Washington, D.C. Ultimately, Trump complied. You mentioned that 89 former defense officials, you were telling us about this, warned that if soldiers went along with this, they would be violating their oaths to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States. It's an extraordinary thing where former defense officials are warning soldiers not to obey the president because this is illegal, it's unconstitutional, it's a violation of, you describe them, their lawful commitments as soldiers to defend the Constitution. And you talked about the veterans organizations helping soldiers not basically to take arms up against their fellow citizens and violate their rights, as one of the military people you quoted cautioned. So it's, I don't think people have really understood how mind-blowing this situation is, that it's not like peaceniks or weirdos like me from San Francisco saying, don't, you know, go out in the streets and pull your gun on your, you know, fellow citizen. It's actually people squarely in the military establishment saying, this is an illegal order, don't do it, it's a violation of the Constitution. So let's go back to what you said about the posse comitatus. There's a lot of questions among people I know, and I think this is like intentionally sowed confusion. Does posse comitatus still obtain? Is it still the law of the land, or has it been kind of qualified or rolled back by subsequent actions like the Insurrection Act? Are these, what is the period of time? When was posse comitatus started? I think it was the Civil War, right? And when was the Insurrection Act? And does the Insurrection Act kind of modify posse comitatus?
Yes, posse comitatus is still on the books, but it has been watered down through the Insurrection Act.
Yes.
And I wanted to say something, Naomi, if I could, about what these 89 former defense officials said. They said, we are alarmed at how the president is betraying his oath to support and defend the Constitution by threatening to order members of the U.S. military to violate the rights of their fellow Americans. And, you know, he gave the governors a stark choice. His defense secretary Esper said, we need to dominate the battle space, as if the streets of the United States, where protesters are exercising their constitutional rights, their First Amendment rights to freedom of speech and assembly, is a battle space.
Well, this is very concerning, Marjorie. Can I just jump in with that? Because we saw in the global war on terror that the definition of where is the battlefield as everywhere, you know, did frighteningly open the door to this kind of militarization of civil assembly, free assembly. And now it seems as if what didn't work with demonizing kind of the entire Muslim world and terrifying everyone to give up their civil rights, now there's a demonization of protest itself and calling the streets of DC or the streets of Seattle the battle space. Is there a risk that the president can just declare that the battlefield is outside my door?
Well, that is a risk. That is a risk. And to follow up on what you're saying, what he has done is to label Black people who are protesting against white supremacy and a history of institutional racism going back 400 years at least, as violent, and their white allies as Antifa. Antifa, which means anti-fascist. Now, there is no such organization called Antifa.
I didn't think so either. What is that? Who made that up?
Well, Antifa has been a description of people who are anti-fascist, but there is no group called Antifa. And yet Trump, who always demonizes anyone who challenges him or challenges his authority, has been tarring people with those labels as and using it as an excuse. Now, one of the things that's interesting, and not interesting, but terrifying, is when there was a peaceful protest on June the 1st in Washington, D.C., in front of the White House, people exercising their constitutional rights in a lawful manner, and Trump, through his prostitute-in-chief Bill Barr, gave an order to use tear gas and chemical weapons and rubber bullets against protesters to break up this peaceful assembly, so that he could walk across the street, walk across the mall, and have a photo op in front of a historic church holding a Bible upside down that he had never read. And it was so outrageous that several groups brought a lawsuit in Washington, D.C. against Trump and Barr, the organizations Black Lives Matter, the ACLU of D.C., Washington Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights and Urban Affairs, Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. And they are seeking an injunction to prevent the use of these chemical weapons and rubber bullets, which can take out an eye, and alleging that their First and Fourth Amendment rights have been violated. Fourth Amendment is unlawful search and seizure. So when a protester is beaten up, excessive force is used, detained, arrested, that's a violation, could be a violation of the Fourth Amendment. And so they're asking for an injunction against that and restitution for trauma and injury sustained from chemicals and physical blows. Also, I should say, I'm very proud that my organization, the National Lawyers Guild, along with Black Lives Matter and a couple of other organizations, has brought a similar lawsuit in Los Angeles. There's also a lawsuit in Oakland, California, to prevent the use of rubber bullets and chemical weapons. And a judge in Denver issued a temporary restraining order against the use of those weapons against protesters in Denver. So we see the courts are being used to, and that's what we do, the National Lawyers Guild. I'm very, very proud to be a member of the National Lawyers Guild for so many years and to be a former president. The National Lawyers Guild is front and center in the legal defense of the protesters in the Black Lives Matter movement. The little green caps that our legal observers wear that says National Lawyers Guild Legal Observers, and legal observers who are not protesters, but they are neutral observers to jot, to take down and witness what the police is, are doing, how they're violating protesters' rights. These legal observers have themselves been targeted. Police have been heard to say, get her, along with the press too, of course, which is, you know, the enemy of the people, according to Donald Trump. But also National Lawyers Guild lawyers are mounting legal defense for these protesters and participating in bringing these lawsuits in the courts. I'm very, very proud of that.
You should be proud of them. And I can tell you from personal experience, when I lost sight of my National Lawyers Guild little green hat legal observer, when I was being, you know, taken into a police van and taken to an undisclosed, unspecified location where there wasn't an observer, I felt very frightened. You guys, National Lawyers Guild provides an absolutely critical service to, as you say, neutrally observe and make sure that really the law is being followed. So it's very terrifying that they're being targeted. This raises two important questions. Number one, the way the police are handling protesters now and the kind of escalation, militarization, the use of things like chemical weapons and rubber bullets, which, by the way, were used in Northern Ireland and can be fatal. You're right, can maim, but there are also cases of them having killed people. They're not like rubber, like a children's toy. This is kind of a new escalation. And when I reported on the brutalization of policing against Occupy in 2011-12, it was centrally dictated. And it doesn't seem to me that all of these police could, in different jurisdictions, in different cities, could be escalating their brutality, their militarization, their use of new techniques like chemical weapons and rubber bullets, if there wasn't some higher up orchestration. What's your view of that? Are they just all running amok and they're a bunch of psychopaths? Or is there, like with DHS directing crackdowns on Occupy protesters, do you think this is coming from higher up, from some centrally directed strategy against protesters?
Well, I certainly think that Trump is setting the tone in a very dangerous way. And I think that these police departments are learning from each other about using these military weapons. And in fact, the Obama administration tried to call a halt to the Pentagon giving their old military weapons and tanks, et cetera, to the civilian police departments. And Trump has lifted that that ban and said, oh, you know, go right ahead. There's something else that needs to be said here, Naomi, and that is the torture and lynching of George Floyd with the knee on the neck by that officer that we all watched for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, which really triggered and galvanized this mass movement. Where did that come from? Where did that tactic come from? Minneapolis police have been trained by Israeli Defense Forces, and I have seen numerous photographs of Palestinians on the ground with Israeli Defense Force soldiers with the knee on the neck. So did the Minneapolis police learn that tactic from the Israeli Defense Force soldiers? Very possibly, and very, very disturbing.
Well, this is a very chilling big picture, because you and I, and sadly not that many other people, have been observing for a decade this is not new. You know, these junkets where American police forces were being sent to Israel to be trained by Israeli military and military police, this has been going on for a decade. And as you noted, the transfer of tanks and military equipment that you would never need in ordinary civil society policing to little tiny towns police forces, you know, as well as big cities police forces for no reason has also been going on for almost a decade. So my real question to you is why? I mean, it, you know, if you look at the big picture of what you're describing, let me add one more piece, which is the National Defense Authorization Act, right? So you're saying now with the subjective interpretation of the Insurrection Act, the president can say, well, you, Naomi, or you, Marjorie, you're Antifa. And yo, I am an anti-fascist. It's, you know, I've written a book saying I'm an anti-fascist. I'm proud to be an anti-fascist. But he could say, you're a terrorist, you're Antifa, outside of your house is a battlefield, and I can send my militarized police against you if you take part in a march. But then, say I'm arrested, say they attack the National Lawyers Guild people so that I don't have my advocate near me. Then there's the National Defense Authorization Act that lets the executive hold anyone without charge or trial forever, like as long as he wants. So I'm just putting these pieces together. This is all, it is not hyperbole to say that these are the precursors, these are the building blocks of a military takeover. Am I overstating this?
I don't think you are, Naomi. I mean, we're talking, why are there people who are called anti-fascist? Why are you an anti-fascist? Why am I an anti-fascist? Because there is creeping fascism, and it's not just creeping, it's moving right along, and it's coming from the White House. The Department of Justice asked Congress to give it authorization to basically suspend the writ of habeas corpus and detain people indefinitely until the civil emergency is over.
When did that happen? That's big news.
They asked Congress, but there was not much of an appetite in Congress to give them that authority, fortunately. But who knows?
That's a huge news story. The Department of Justice asked to suspend habeas corpus. Are you kidding me? I follow this and I missed it.
Right. In fact, I wrote an article about that, which you also maybe missed. But it talks specifically about, well, the suspension clause of the Constitution creates habeas corpus and says the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended except by rebellion or insurrection when Congress decides to do it. So only Congress can suspend it. Abraham Lincoln illegally suspended habeas corpus during the Civil War. This is not the first time. So who knows when things heat up, whether Congress, which is controlled, certainly the Senate, still controlled by the Republicans, hopefully that will change in November if the cheating is not too rampant, or rampant enough, I should say. But who knows what Congress will do. We do have a democratically controlled House at this point, which has been doing some very important things, passed over 220 bills, which are sitting on Mitch McConnell's desk. Mitch McConnell, the other prostitute. I don't know if he's the prostitute in chief or Bill Barr is. I think it's kind of a 1-2 punch. And of course, Trump remaking the courts to radically shift them to the right, not just the Supreme Court. And if he is reelected, we're talking about very likely Trump creating a 7-2 radical right-wing majority for decades, which puts all of our rights in jeopardy, but also the lower federal courts, federal judges at the district court level and the appellate court level who have lifetime appointments, and he has appointed nearly 200, filled nearly 200 of those vacancies. And that's where most of the law takes place. Most of the law is made at the lower court level in the federal system. It rarely gets up to the Supreme Court. And they're really doing a lot of very, very disturbing things. Now, if Trump were to declare, say, where you are, a battle zone, bring tanks in, call you a terrorist, et cetera, you know, assuming that you survive that illegal onslaught, then and go through all of the legal process, then you could bring a lawsuit, and then it goes into the courts. You know, we have this these three co-equal branches of government to check and balance each other that the founders put into the Constitution: the judicial, the legislative, and the judicial, legislative, and executive. And so the courts are supposed to check and balance the executive. They do that to a certain extent, but the courts are also very ideological, as I said, and really kind of salute and march in many instances to what Trump wants.
Right, but let's go back to, so that's it when we're functioning as a civil society, Marjorie. But what I want to say, and I think you'd agree with me, is that once you've got the president deploying troops on the streets of America, it's a complete game changer. And I just want to remind everyone that history shows you can have judges, you can have Congress or Parliament, but when there are troops in the streets, they become afraid to check the power of whoever is leading the troops. You know, the way that Italy fell was that members of Parliament were menaced by, you know, men in uniform. I mean, that's the next step. And so to me, as a student of history, the fact that there were 1,600, you know, soldiers on the streets of Washington, D.C., historically, nothing good comes of that. Like, you can predict what's going to happen next. And I think you're right to worry about the election, because if he doesn't win, the natural thing to do if you're, you know, illegally seizing power is to, you know, deploy those troops, or however many of them will follow your instructions, to let people know that you're not leaving. And so it's a very terrifying precedent. Let me go back just so people really understand this. What is supposed to happen? And I know that we need to stop soon. You've been very generous with your time. According to you, the president violated the Constitution by calling out the troops with his very broad definition of the Insurrection Act. What happens to presidents who do something illegal or unconstitutional? And are they the same thing? Like, what is supposed to happen short of impeachment? What recourse do we have? You know, he's doing it. He's done it. What's supposed to happen?
Well, there was tremendous blowback from former generals, defense officials, Congress members, which caused him to withdraw the troops. Now, he framed it in his Trumpian way that, protesters got scared when I brought the troops, and so now everything is peaceful, and so I can withdraw the troops, taking credit for it. But that's not really what happened. It was the backlash that caused him to withdraw the troops. So that's the political piece of it. Now, if people's rights are violated, they can go into the courts and ask the courts to declare what the president has done unlawful. The courts are very hesitant to do that, particularly the Supreme Court and courts that have right-wing judges on them in the majority, because they subscribe to this theory, many of them, including Bill Barr, to unitary executive, that the president controls the whole executive branch, and so he can do whatever he wants. Bill Barr wrote in a 2018 memo that got him the job as attorney general that the president has total control over the entire executive branch, including over decisions about his own conduct and whether his own conduct is illegal. But then we have the other piece, and that is the troops, the soldiers, the service members who don't want to be firing on and killing their fellow citizens. And if that did happen, that horrible worst case scenario that you painted, then I can see large numbers of service members refusing orders and suffering whatever consequences they do, refusing orders because they think those orders are illegal. That's what should have happened at Nuremberg. The defense of following superior orders. I was just following orders. They didn't buy that at Nuremberg, and that is so. That defense will not work. And I think that there would be widespread resistance in the military to an order like that. At least I hope there would be.
Well, on that note, I mean, it's one of the most important interviews, you know, of my lifetime that we've just had. I hope everyone in America listens to it. Do you have a final call to action? What should ordinary citizens, activists, people marching with Black Lives Matter, people who just want to express their First Amendment rights safely, what should they do? They should call the National Lawyers Guild. They should walk with their number in their pocket. What else? What's your What's your call out to the people watching this? What action can they take? In addition to, of course, going to marjoriecohn.com for more articles, educate yourself. It's like following Marjorie is like a doctorate in civil liberties and freedom. You can't miss it. Her work, her books, her columns, her videos. You got to go to marjoriecohn.com. But what is your final message to the people watching this?
My final message is don't be discouraged or deterred from exercising your constitutional rights, your First Amendment rights to protest white supremacy, police brutality, racist violence by the police tactics of using these rubber bullets and chemical weapons. There are lawsuits being filed all over the country to stop that and enjoin it. And I'm hoping that people will not be deterred by that. And yes, I think that it's important for people to have the information. GI Rights Hotline and National Lawyers Guild Military Law Task Force, you can get to them by nlg.org, which is the National Lawyers Guild website. And also for service members who think they may be put in a position to be given illegal orders, to also go to the GI Rights Hotline, National Lawyers Guild Military Law Task Force, and Veterans for Peace as well.
Thank you so much, Marjorie. We're going to embed those hotline numbers in the blog. Thank God, honestly, as an American, as the wife of a veteran, as the mother of people who march with protesters, thank God for you. Thank God for the National Lawyers Guild. And, you know, with you and the people watching, I think we still have a chance to save this country. Thank you so much for your time. My personal, you know, shining example of how to be a person and an activist, Marjorie Cohn. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Naomi, for that and for your terrific work over the years. You are just a beacon, and I'm just so honored to be on your show.
Well, we feel the same way about each other. Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your day. Take care.
You too. Bye. Uh-huh.